Hello, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio. Thank you very much for tuning in. Folks, I got to tell you, you know, I'm always excited. This is the Just Transition segment of the Union Edge. And, of course, in studio today, we've got Dr. Patty DeMarco. Patty,
hello, Charles. Back. Good to see you. I'm glad I survived the Clean Energy Revolution March last weekend, and I'm here to talk to you.
Shocking. Sorry.
Well, it's been a long time since I marched around with a street full of 10,000 people screaming, you know, about stopping fracking and taking care of our future for our kids.
You know, I don't get this. I don't understand. Well, I do. But, you know, I'm thinking to myself, you know, it was probably about 8 or 10 years ago when BP got real serious about jumping into the solar game.
Beyond petroleum.
Right. And you know, if you were coming back off of 270, coming back into Pennsylvania, coming out of D.C., they had that big building with all those solar panels on it. And you just knew that they were frying eggs inside or something like that. But the long and short of it is the technology, the economies of scale, the availability, the people doing it, it's here.
Exactly.
We're no longer having to wait for it. It's here right now. Why aren't we doing it?
It's not a technology problem. It's an ethics problem. It's a commitment problem. And it's a matter of overcoming the fear of making a change. And one of the things that I'm excited about today is to have my good friend Larry Schweiger here in studio with us. He is a longtime head of the National Wildlife Federation and now heads the Citizens for Pennsylvania's Future, Penn Future. And Larry's been a warrior in this field of environmental preservation at least as long as I have, since the early 70s. And I'm really glad to have him here today. Larry, welcome.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Yeah. And we're going to talk a little bit about how powerful it is when labor and environment get together. And, you know, some of the biggest successes that we've had in achieving things for people, like establishing OSHA, like establishing the Clean Air Act and the Safe Drinking Water Act, happened because labor and environment got together and made it happen. And we need a big tent like that now, because climate change is the existential issue of our time. It is a matter of life and death that we deal with this and deal with it quickly. And so we need every hand on deck. We can't afford to have people sit out or feel left out or feel pushed out of this battle. And, you know, I want to start with just a quick reminder that Richard Trumpke from the AFL-CIO president really has the vision for what we can be doing together. He said that not since World War II, 70 years ago, have we in America faced an equivalent national challenge, and working people are ready to rise to that challenge, to invest our pension capital, put on our hard hats to get the job done, because this is the kind of challenge that America has always ridden toward greatness. And we need to do things like rebuild our infrastructure for power, for transportation, and rethink how we do buildings. So it takes workers to do that,
right.
And it takes workers working together to do that.
And this is one of the things that the building trades are exceptionally well qualified to do.
Yeah.
You know, here in the greater Pittsburgh area, we've got some projects that are getting ready to go up. Whether or not people agree with those projects or not, I'm talking about the logistics in getting young men and women, not so young men and women, getting the veterans that are in the area into the apprenticeship programs, getting them trained, getting them out into the field as full apprentices doing the job. And the building trades can go from 0 to 180 miles an hour in just about a split second when it comes to training, because they have the facilities and the people in place. And my goodness gracious sakes alive, I've been told if they have to bring back the retirees to come teach, that's what they're going to do. Now, in this situation, when we're talking about major revamps, for instance, the electrical grid, I like talking about the electrical grid. My great-grandchildren will retire and their work will still be going on. We've got a lot of work to do, but if we do it, we are immediately going to save 8 to 10% in production costs. And if we do a smart grid, even if we just do a smart grid on all new construction, we're going to be saving even more.
Yeah. Larry, you've been working hard on those rules that make that happen, right?
Well, there's a number of great examples. The one that I would point to is when in the early days of the Obama administration, when GM was declaring bankruptcy, I stood with the CEO of GM to support them in the bailout. And the reason why I did that, and a lot of people criticized me because they were, after all, the makers of all these polluting cars. The reason why I did that was that I believed that there was a new future for GM and for the entire industry. And that's, in fact, what's happened. If you look at what we've done, we came together with the auto workers, with the three big automakers in the United States, and carved out a plan to cut emissions by 50%, cutting fuel usage by 50%. And they're not only well on the way to that, but they're actually going to exceed those goals. I think the same is true with a new grid. We should have a DC backbone across this country. Yep. Clean Lines, for example, have been working hard to get permitting, to get all the pathway cleared. And companies like that ought to be given an opportunity to really make those actions happen quicker. But clearly, we have some great examples of how it can be done. I think policy too often is an impediment to progress, and we need to change policies in this country to be fitted for a 21st century.
Larry, that's you true. Talk about a DC, and I'm sorry, Larry, you talk about a DC backbone. What I don't think most people here in the United States understand is most of the appliances that we have
are DC.
Work on DC. Right.
That's direct current.
Right.
Yeah. As opposed to
we're taking
current.
AC, alternating current, out of the wall, converting it inside our equipment to DC to run.
Yeah.
If we installed, and DC carries further than AC. AC peters out after like 5 or 10 miles from what I understand. DC keeps on going. It's like an Energizer bunny. It just keeps on going. Well, okay, that's what okay. I thought. I just got corrected by Dr. Patty. Oh, no.
So, friction happens.
Friction happens. What, we can't water it? So, but my question is if we went to a DC backbone, now we know that we're still going to need AC, but can we convert in localities?
Well, it's interesting because there's a number of people looking at how we go straight to DC and stay with DC all the way into the house. The technology is actually there to do that. So you don't have all these converters. I mean, you look at the number of converters we have in our home, just the cell phones. I mean, I got a whole drawer full of darn things. You know, clearly we ought to be, moving to a new energy future. And I see the day when we have DC wiring in our homes and that we use DC directly off of a DC circuit.
Now,
and one of the key things is that when you generate power with a solar photovoltaic system on your roof, it's already DC.
Right, right.
So you don't have to flip it over and do the losses. Every time you do those conversions, you lose efficiency in the process. So it would increase the efficiency across the board right now.
Right. No inverters. Right. Yeah. No meters. No batteries. I'm telling you, a wind turbine in there, and you're gold. Hey, listen, guys, we need to take a short break. We'll come back, and we'll talk some more. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio.
Wyoming is the only state in the nation to tax wind energy production, and lawmakers recently moved to increase taxes to help fill the gap left by falling fossil fuel revenues. Critics fear higher taxes will push wind development to other states, costing taxpayers more in the long run. Robert Godby with the University of Wyoming Center for Energy Economics and Public Policy says climate change politics aside, the state is positioned to be a leader in wind energy.
There are sites in Wyoming where the wind blows very often and blows typically quite hard enough so that you get almost maximum potential from the turbine. So for that reason, Wyoming really does have a rich wind resource.
Almost half of the best winds in America blow across the Cowboy State, according to the National Renewable Energy Lab. Legislators say the industry needs to pay its fair share, on par with other energy producers. Godby points out the severance model compensates the state for assets that are removed from the ground, but wind is different. It's not going anywhere. Officials with the Power Company of Wyoming say higher taxes could derail wind development in the state, including its plans to build the nation's largest onshore wind farm south of Rawlins. Godby contrasts Wyoming's policies to efforts made by neighboring states, such as Colorado, which provides incentives, such as clean energy mandates, to attract investment. He says if utilities have to buy a certain amount of renewable energy, companies know there will be a specific and reliable demand for their product.
So in effect, you don't have to go find the market. The market is searching for you. When several states around us have those sorts of rules, then clearly we might be at a competitive disadvantage.
He believes Wyoming's ambivalence about renewable energy isn't about wind or the sun. Godbey says renewables represent change in a state that until recently has thrived on fossil fuels, and he says with change comes fear of the unknown. This is Eric Galatis reporting for the Wyoming News Service.
People are always looking to invest in a good opportunity. So what if you could invest in the future of kids, like a stock? Not the kind of stock that's about making money, but a stock for social change called Better Futures. With your investment, it helps students like me go to college. My name is Charles, and I'm your dividend.
Invest in better futures with UNCF. Visit uncf.org/invest. A mind is a terrible thing to waste, but a wonderful thing to invest in. Brought to you by UNCF and the Ad Council.
It only takes a minute to find out if you may have prediabetes, and you can do it at doihaveprediabetes.org. But you're probably not going to, are you? Kids, work, listening to the radio. You're busy. Which is great, because busy people can't get prediabetes. Oh my, I read that wrong. They can. Should have worn my glasses. So visit doihaveprediabetes.org and take a short test, because prediabetes can be reversed.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
Whoa.
The moment my son saw a redwood tree.
It's huge!
Is the moment I knew that for him.
You can't even see the top! Thing.
Even the sky has no limit.
There are some moments only the forest can inspire. Find yours at discovertheforest.org. Learn about forests near you and discover cool things to do when you go. Your moment is out there. Find it at discovertheforest.org.
Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
My name is Ruth Rusi, and this is how I live United. I read to children as part of United Way's education program. It helps them create links between language and literacy and prepares them for a better academic future. I figure I have the time and they have the need. My name is Ruth Rusi. I help kids prepare to succeed in school. So I don't just wear the shirt, I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live United. Go to liveunited.org, brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Let's get America working. We must build, maintain, and repair our nation's crumbling infrastructure. Teamsters support a bipartisan approach to creating good jobs for American workers. Learn more at letsgetamericaworking.com. Teamsters strong, America stronger.
Hello, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio. Thank you very much for tuning in. We appreciate it. Hey, it's just transition times, and in studio, Patty DeMarco. Patty, welcome back.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to have Larry Schweiger here in the studio with me, and we were talking about rebuilding the grid and some of the ways that labor and environment have worked together to accomplish great things. And Larry, I think you've been on the front lines on dealing with some of the regulatory infrastructure as well that has to change in order to make our energy future a little more accessible.
Well, I think it's we're at a really important moment because we're still putting 110 million tons of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere every day.
Mm-hmm.
And the scientists are saying we need to cut those emissions by about 5 to 7%, maybe as much as 8% per year. Right. We're currently hitting less than 1%.
Right.
So we need to do a lot more, a lot faster. And that, to me, is an opportunity for enormous build-out. And we should take away all the regulatory and legislative impediments to that build-out. It's time to build a new energy economy, and we can do it, but we need to move fast or we're going to hit the trigger points on our planet.
Guys, let me ask you this question. We know that I don't want to say alternative energy, but new energy source jobs here in Pennsylvania are outpacing old energy jobs.
Right.
By
right.
a huge margin. And right. they're doing the same thing across the United States.
That's right.
We need, if I am correct, we need a project along the lines of what we did with the superhighways here in the United States. Am I right? I mean, is that how big?
I think it's absolutely right. And I, in the past, supported various proposals to actually do that. One of the things that will help us is if we put a price on carbon, let's take some of that revenue from those carbon pricing structures that need to be done, and they need to be deployed worldwide, and put those to work building this infrastructure at a faster pace. And we can reemploy a lot of the people that are sitting on their couches today and get folks back into the job market And retraining is not a problem, as you pointed out earlier. I think it's just a matter of getting our political leaders to understand the urgency and the scale and the opportunity we have to build a new energy economy together.
Well, the other thing is that you have to stop subsidizing the fossil fuels, and all of the above energy strategy is not going to cut it for dealing with climate change. We have to say there is no point to subsidizing with taxpayers' money the continuation of the fossil fuel industry. They've been getting getting below market value leases on federal lands. They've been getting tax credits that are hardwired into the budget, not having to be reauthorized at random the wish of Congress every couple of years. They've had all kinds of tax and trade advantages that we don't extend to any other industry, and it's time to stop. So if you take even a portion of the subsidies that are going to the fossil industry, you could take care of the pensions and health benefits for every coal miner that's still working. You could retrain and give them 4 years of, you know, opportunity to go into whatever field they want. And you could help put investment money into this new infrastructure.
And, you know, one of the other things that's really neat about this is the retraining is not that big of a deal. Because if you're a welder, guess what?
You can weld anything.
Right. And if you're an electrician, guess what?
Yeah.
You know, and if you're a mechanic and you've been fixing mine equipment, well, guess what? You know?
And if you lay pipe, you can do geothermal earth tubes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. And I really want to talk about the regulatory problems with the solar incentives. Places like Pennsylvania have been a real firewall, you know, to progress on some of this. We've been doing well in spite of it, but it's been very frustrating here.
It has been. And you know, there's a lot of rhetoric about, you know, what constitutes good regulation for promoting solar. I think we need to have an opportunity. I have solar on my home. I produce my own solar. But there are times during the day that I'm producing more solar than I need. And I think I should get compensated fairly for putting that back out there. And incidentally, that's during the daytime hours when the energy prices are actually higher.
Mm-hmm.
At night, when I need energy, I'm basically buying the excess spinning stock that's already out there. So I think solar for a long time should be encouraged because it helps to really level out our energy needs and balances out. When we get to the point where solar is producing more than we can use, then we get to lithium batteries. I think the gigafactory that Elon Musk is talking about is a very exciting.
Yeah, what, a $5 billion project down in Nevada?
Exactly.
Holy gee.
And we had Aquion batteries on just last month talking about saltwater
batteries.
Yeah.
It's exciting because that becomes the tool to balance solar, wind, all these other new energy sources, and we meld them together and we have a battery to help suck up the
You don't really even need to go just to batteries because you can do solar-powered electrolysis of water, even dirty water, and go to a hydrogen fuel cell backup, which allows you the flexibility of having baseload power at any time, and you can generate that with solar power as well. So I think you can move to that. That technology is not experimental. It's been used on submarines to generate both oxygen and fresh water, and I think you have a lot of opportunities to deploy these things into mainstream application. I think really our challenge, you know, Larry, is how do we get some hands across these divides and get people to understand that, you know, the Restore Act that you mentioned while we were on break, that has been in Congress now for, what, two sessions, and they can't get it up for a vote?
Yeah, and it's really interesting because Mitch McConnell is one of the impediments, and he's from a coal world.
Coal state.
You know, years ago, in 1977, we were able to get a tax on coal for dealing with black lung.
Right.
And that fund has grown over the years, and it has enormous reserves that aren't being spent. So it's sitting there. And we need to redeploy some of that money because of the new mining techniques. There's not as much black lung as there used to be. So that money could be redeployed to help people with their pensions, to help miners get retrained, and to help the communities that the miners live in transition to a new energy future. I personally think that we ought to cover all those ruined mountains down in West Virginia with solar panels. I mean, we ought to take those the scarred lands and convert them to the next energy future, and give those miners the opportunity to reinvigorate their own communities.
Yeah. It is a matter of community reinvestment, because that's really what will make this real to people, is when you have a new energy system powering your community, then people can see it, they can feel it, they have a vested interest in having it succeed. And you really are only in the beginning of all of those interconnected infrastructure that makes a system work, as opposed to just a technology.
Right.
You know, when you went from horse and buggy to cars, you think about those early cars, and they look pretty much like buggies, right? That's about where we are.
Right.
But now you have things that are so sophisticated. You've got specialized apparatus to hold your coffee cup and your UBS plug-in and whatever. I think you have a great distance to go. And, you know, workers doing it iteratively,
you know,
come up with those inventions.
You know, I get the petroleum folks and I get the coal folks, okay? They've been top dog for so long, and they are just holding on to that nickel, trying to squeeze that buffalo for the last little bit.
Right.
But, you know, now is the time, and it's changed. And I believe that... The vast majority of this is the education and process and talking about this. And, you know, Larry, I mean, you were with the NWF, National Wildlife Foundation. I mean, you know, you've got long, very strong, very deep ties with the union folks through the Union Sportsmen's Alliance. Mm-hmm. And, you know, those are the same people that will be doing the initial groundwork of building this stuff. And teaching the next generations on this. I mean, you know, Patty, we've talked about this before. I mean, here in Pennsylvania, we had Gamesa USA making state-of-the-art wind turbines. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't state-of-the-art because it was rocket science. It was state-of-the-art because they had the best machinists available, making the best equipment available, and you didn't have to ship it from China.
Well, and there again, it was a policy failure of the previous administration that left Gamesa out in the cold, and it was a failure of seeing the future. And I think, having served on the Blue-Green Alliance board, I can say this, that if the environmental community and the labor community could get together, we can invent a new future for America, and there'll be a lot of wonderful jobs around, and we'll have a much safer environment for our children. And I personally, that to me is a point of a personal passion. I think we can do it together.
Right.
And
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Patty.
It's okay. I'm just saying, I think that when you've seen the blue jobs and the green jobs get together, you do get tremendous leaps forward of innovation and really a very good confluence of interest.
Absolutely. Larry, thank you for being with us today. We appreciate it. We'll get you back in again soon. Lots of fun today.
Great. Thank you.
Patty,
always a
pleasure.
Thank you.
Patty DeMarco, Just Transitions. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio.